shows more than half of Britons believe that Prime Minister Boris Johnson should resign over a series of scandals involving him and his aides. Iran's top negotiator says the 2015 nuclear deal remains Tehran's red line, and the country won't settle for anything less. And Israel's move to take over a water spring and build settlements in the Jordan Valley provoking fierce criticism from Palestinians. Live from Tehran, this is World News. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The top story this hour, back-to-back scandals taking their toll on the popularity of British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his ruling Conservative Party. An opinion poll indicating support for Conservatives is down 4 points to 32%. And that gives the opposition Labour a 9-point lead, the largest since 2014. Johnson's own ratings are also at their lowest since his party won a landslide in 2019. His popularity is 14% down in 2 weeks. More than half of the voters also said that he should resign. People are angry about parties at the Prime Minister's residence amid the COVID lockdowns and the costly refurbishment of his residence. And that besides revelations that Johnson intervened to evacuate pets from Kabul during the chaotic Afghan withdrawal. His failed attempt to save a Tory lawmaker from suspension also drew lots of criticism. Voting is over in an independence referendum in the French territory of New Caledonia, which has raised fears of violence in the Pacific Island. And this is the third and final vote on the issue and is expected to be tight. The previous ballots were held in 2018 and 2020, during which 57 and 53% of voters rejected independence. The indigenous Kanak population, which backs independence, has been calling on people to avoid the vote. Their fears that another no vote would stoke tensions between supporters of independence and those willing to remain French. New Caledonia is at the heart of President Emmanuel Macron's plan to increase France's influence in the Pacific. Okay, now from Paris, let's bring in Kristen Hund, our correspondent there. Chris, so tell us the story. It looks like that the people are divided in that region, so what's expected to happen?
Well, this was the third and final vote in a referendum that has been discussed and agreed to a long time ago in 1988 when the representatives of the Kanak people and the French authorities in that period, they agreed for an evolution towards a full sovereignty. This happened in 1988, so two referendums already took place. It gave a very slight majority to the no vote to full sovereignty, full independence. Now this third vote is special because the independentist movement called for a boycott of the referendum because they say that because of the COVID crisis, they did not have the exact means, the possibilities to make campaign, and also they are blaming the French authorities that due to the COVID crisis, they don't have the authority, the permission to do correct mornings during the funerals, and there are also travel restrictions. So that's why the independentist movement called for a boycott. That's why also that the result, the final result of this referendum, as those who are against full independence will vote, are going to vote, and those who are in favor of a full independence are supposed not going to vote. So it's a kind of blocked situation. It must also be known that the two previous referendums were very tight, so any outcome of this referendum remains an unstable. It will not be accepted by the entire population. One should also know that the French presence in New Caledonia is a colonial presence because they are there because of the natural resources, which is mainly nickel and cobalt, and also China is looking behind the door. China already said publicly that if France puts one step back, they will take over, not necessarily by a political colonization, but by an economical domination of New Caledonia. So that's the actual situation today.
Okay, and Chris, tell us also a little bit about President Macron, the incumbent president of France, and how his government would be affected by whatever result out of this vote.
Well, the government will be affected because if there is a referendum agreed to by all the components of the Kanak population, it will be a positive element for his election campaign, because whatever happens now today, everybody in France, every politician is in campaign already. So this referendum, the outcome of this referendum, if it's an unsecure outcome and like 50-50%, and with the boycott of the independentist movement of New Caledonia, it's a blame for the French government and for Macron, because it shows that he is again not able to organize, to arrange problems, not only in the French society, in the metropole in France, which caused a lot of demonstrations with the Yellow Vest movement, but also abroad, which is considered as the French colonial presence in New Caledonia, but also in other like in Martinique and other overseas French territories. The French authorities, colonial authorities based in Paris, are very, very criticized because of the way they deal with the COVID crisis. They say there is a kind of arrangement, political arrangement, in France, in the metropoles, but not overseas.
Okay, thanks for that.
Against the French government, and Macron could pay the price for that.
All right. Thanks a lot for that, Kristen Hundar, correspondent in Paris. Now, thousands of people rallied in the Spanish city of Barcelona to protest COVID restrictions there. Protesters held signs and chanted slogans saying that the freedom has been violated and restrictions prevent him from having a normal life. Similar rallies were held in Austria and Luxembourg. In Vienna, thousands turned out against a nationwide lockdown and a sweeping vaccine mandate. They want the government to lift the ban. The Austrian government imposed a national lockdown last month to curb a fresh resurgence of the pandemic. There are also plans to make vaccination compulsory from February. Iran and the remaining parties to the nuclear deal are holding their seventh round of negotiations in the Austrian capital. Iran's lead negotiator saying that Tehran won't accept anything less than the terms agreed upon under the original 2015 accord. Omar Lesky reports.
As the seventh round of talks aimed at reviving the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA continue in Vienna, Iran's lead negotiator, Ali Bagheri-Kani, says some of the issues raised by his team have been accepted, while others have not.
In the course of the talks that have taken place over the past few days, some of these issues were accepted by the other side and some were not. Therefore, we will have a number of issues alongside previous areas of disagreement, which are not too many, that will form the basis for serious discussions at the level of senior negotiators from Iran and the 4+1 countries.
The new Iranian team says it's asking for the verifiable removal of all post-2015 U.S. sanctions before it goes back to full compliance with the JCPOA. Iran has also asked for guarantees the U.S. would not withdraw from the deal again or impose new sanctions that would impede its implementation.
We have a basic logical red line, an agreement that was finalized in 2015 between Iran and the P5+1. The U.S. withdrew from that deal and now it wants to re-enter. So this agreement is a common basis between the two sides. Therefore, we will definitely not accept anything less than the JCPOA. This will definitely be a red line for Iran.
Meanwhile, European officials warn that time is running out amid claims that Iran's demands are stalling progress.
The Europeans know quite well that issues that are unresolved in the previous draft, or issues within the previous draft that were in violation of the JCPOA, they will have to be fixed and they will have to be corrected. They understand this. And while the Europeans are speaking about the original draft, but they know quite well where things stand.
According to an EU official, talks are advancing logically, while the Russian delegate has pointed out that certain misunderstandings from the previous week have now been resolved, although reaching a final deal will take time and a lot of effort. Homa Lesky, Vienna.
All right, now moving on, our correspondent Ramallah Mona Kendall saying that Israeli settlers have blocked access to the Jordan Valley spring that belongs to Palestinian shepherds.
Well, the statement of the Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs comes after Israeli settlers on Friday started restoration work for a water spring in the Jordan Valley area. This water spring called Khilat al-Khadr in an area called the Khirbat al-Farisiya in the Jordan Valley. They started to restore the water spring. This means preventing Palestinians from reaching that area or using the water spring that is originally belongs to Palestinian shepherds there. We are speaking about the Jordan Valley area that the Israelis can continue to attack, continue to seize lands there. The Jordan Valley area covers about 1.6 million dunams and constitutes around 30% of the whole occupied West Bank. That's why the Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs urged the international community first to force the Israeli regime to stop settlement activity and also to try to stop the Israeli authorities and the Israeli settlers at the same time to seize more lands in the Jordan Valley area.
Now more civilians end up dead and injured after fighter jets from the Saud-led coalition bomb a residential area in the northwest. At least three people are dead, two of them children. Two more people got injured in the air raid that targeted a house in the Herat district in the Hejaz province. Also on Saturday, Saudi warplanes bombed several Yemeni provinces more than 50 times. Most of them happened in Marib province. Hodeida and Sada were also targeted. The Saudi-led military attacks and blockade have claimed hundreds of thousands of lives and pushed Yemen into a humanitarian catastrophe over the past 6 years. Now, Lebanon's former information minister says that he maintains his stance on the Saudi war on Yemen. We've discussed that issue at length with our guests in our news review program. Let's see what they had to say.
Lebanon's former information minister says that he maintains his stance on the Lebanese resistance movement and Syria. George Cordahi said he has paid the price for supporting the Lebanese resistance movement and Syria. Cordahi also stressed he does not change his stance toward the Saudi war on Yemen. Cordahi resigned earlier this month amid pressure from Riyadh and its allies. He said his resignation was a bargaining chip for French President Emmanuel Macron to use to open talks with the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Cordahi made the remarks in an exclusive interview with Iran's Al Alam TV channel. An audio from Cordahi was released in November in which he criticized Saudi Arabia's war on Yemen. Riyadh was infuriated by comments and took a series of punitive measures against Beirut, with several Arab states following suit. Joining us now for the program is Mr. Paul Lerudy, former lecturer for the Lebanese National University, joining us from Berkeley, California, and Firas Al-Najim, manager at Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, joining us from Ottawa, Ontario. Gentlemen, welcome you both to the program. Paul, I guess we'll start with you. Hope you're safe and doing well out there in overcast Northern California. Your initial thoughts on Cordahi's remarks where he blasted the Saudis and their allies, what they're doing in Yemen, and the fact that as a result, there were multiple Arab states, Saudi allies, that banned ambassadors, they recalled ambassadors, they kicked them out, they basically were preventing students from finishing their education. They went really above and beyond the scope of one man's comments. Why was their reactions, in your perspective, so dramatic to Cordahi's remarks?
I mean, it's quite simple, really. It's because Saudi Arabia is losing in Yemen, and they feel that they need to double down and get as much compliance and be able to throw their weight around as much as possible. So in the case, they're doing this in Yemen in order to try to assert their will upon Yemen, and they're doing it in Lebanon in order to assert their will upon Lebanon. They'll do it wherever they can, especially when they are more powerful than the power from which they're trying to get compliance. So that it's a pure power play, and they're ready to punish, and they want to show everybody else in the game that they are willing to take drastic measures.
Thank you, Paul. And Firas, I'd like to welcome you to the program. And that's just the point, Firas, that what Mr. Kordahi said, these have been echoed by British lawmakers, by U.S. lawmakers, although both those countries still continue to sell billions of dollars worth of arms to Riyadh. But the whole point is there are people that have made those remarks before. We didn't see anyone getting recalled. We didn't see anyone getting expelled. But why? Why is Saudi Arabia so sensitive when it comes to the Lebanese politicians making the same remarks?
I mean, it's also very clear, and it reveals exactly and exposes the Saudi regime, because they're always throwing these accusations that Iran is controlling the Lebanese politicians, different factions, and that they have control of all of Iran. I mean, sorry, Lebanon. But this really shows that Saudi Arabia feels like they own Lebanon and all the ministers, and they want to punish them for criticizing and for condemning a war. And plus, this was done before George Kardahi was even a minister. This was done at a time when he wasn't even appointed in that position yet. So it was open-minded session, and it was live streaming, and there was young people involved in this media sit down to talk about different things that have to do with the Arab world and the Muslim world and so on. And he expressed his basic opinion, saying that he thinks that this war is evil, and that the Yemenis have the right to resist and respond and to like defend themselves. And I think every nation has a right to defend themselves when they're being aggressive against. It's not like Yemen is the one that's attacking Saudi Arabia or has never attacked the borders of Saudi Arabia until the Saudi coalition launched this war almost 7 years back. And it has caused the worst humanitarian crisis in the whole world. I mean, and the man just basically, he expressed his basic opinion, standing up for the most oppressed people in the world, in the Yemeni nation, and also the neighbor of Saudi Arabia. You know, usually the manners and the morals of a neighbor should be, especially as a Muslim, Muslims have learned that you got to take care of your neighbor, you have to respect your neighbor, you got to help your neighbor, but instead, they bombard the neighbor, they choke them, and they blockade them, and they're doing the same thing as the Zionists. The Zionists also, if you watch their tactics, is always intolerance, claiming somebody's anti-Semitic if he criticizes the Zionist regime. And the Saudi regime is doing the exact same kind of thing, but with a different face and different name and different label.
All right, gentlemen, thanks for joining us on the program. Paul Lurie, they're joining us from Berkeley, California, and Firas Al-Najim joining us out of Ottawa, Ontario. And that's a wrap for this segment of your News Review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Tell a little about yourself. I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, December 12th, 2021. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. If you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us. Actually, an eQSL card from us, because we are in the time of pandemic and we have no choice but sending our dear listeners around the world an eQSL card. So here I do express my warm appreciations to those of our great listeners who have sent us reception reports, including Toshio Shibata from Japan, Michael Sjöberg from Sweden, and Radar Bo from Norway. All of them are regular listeners. Many thanks for sending us these reception reports. And here I truly appreciate those of our great listeners who have sent us kind and warm emails and messages from around the world, including Muhammad Briel from Malaysia, Anand Mohan Bain from India, Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia, Mohammad Sharifal Islam from Bangladesh, and the last but not the least is an email from India from Pratima Bahakat from Foreign Radio Listeners Club. All of them actually are old and regular listeners. All of you, many thanks for sending us these emails from around the world. So please stay with us. After a short break, I will be back and read these great emails. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as I said, we have received an email from Malaysia. This email is from Muhammad Briel, one of our regular listeners. Muhammad says, Assalamu alaikum. Dear friends at the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio. Greetings from Malaysia. As before, I'm submitting another reception report for the English radio of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcast, which was held on December 8, 2021, from 15:10 till 15:30 UTC. Details of this transmission with audio or video file may be found ensconced to this email. Should it be correct, your QSL card would be very much appreciated. Thank you. Kind regards from Selangor, Malaysia. Salam and warm greetings to you from Iran, from IRIB English Radio. And many thanks for sending us this email, Muhammad Briel, one of our regular listeners from Malaysia. Yes, we received your reception report for IRIB English Radio, and we sent our appreciations to you for sending us this reception report, and thank you very much for telling us the details of your listening. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation, and thank you for all. Muhammad Briel from Malaysia, from your region, Selangor, as you said. We are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your region. Muhammad, send us more emails and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcasts. We are waiting for one of them. And from India, we have an email from Anand Mohan Bain. Anand Mohan Bain from India, one of our regular listeners, says, "Dear staff at IRIB English Radio, kindly send me the list of your new programs and frequency schedule with 2022 calendar, if it's available, as well as a printed QSL card. I am one of your regular listeners from India, and I am actually the president of a radio listeners club. Thank you for broadcasting informative programs. We appreciate it." Salam and warm greetings to you from the Islamic Republic of Iran and IRIB English Radio, Anand Mohan Bain from India, and thank you very much for sending us this email. And my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation, but unfortunately we can't send you the frequency schedule and the 2022 calendar printed QSL card. As you know, we are in the time of pandemic, and because of the regulations and rule, the international regulations and rule, we cannot send you the promotional items of IRIB English Radio. And at the time of the pandemic, the only thing we can do is sending our great listeners just EQSL cards. Please accept it from us after the pandemic and after the control of this virus around the world. We will get back on the track, and we will send you the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. Thank you for sending us this email. In your upcoming emails, Anand Mohan Bain, tell us which program or programs you like the best. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with more emails and letters from around the world. Stay with us. Welcome back. You just heard a piece of traditional Iranian music, and I love that. I don't know about yours. From Russia, we have an email from Vasily Kuznetsov, one of our regular listeners. Vasily Kuznetsov says, "Dear friends, I was glad to listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on short waves. I have very good reception of English and Russian programs of IRIB in Moscow region where I live. For my opinion, the news program of English service is very good. Also, I should say that your website in both English and Russian languages are very informative. Keep up the good work." Salam and warm greetings to you, Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia, and thank you very much. for sending us this email, and of course, letting us know which program or programs you like the best, and your opinion about our website. We are so happy that you are able to receive the signals of IRIB English Radio, and of course, the Russian language version of IRIB Radio, the World Service in your region, Moscow. We are so happy for that. Your opinion, letting us know your opinion about the quality of our programs. As you said, the news programs of English Service is very good, and the website is very informative. It's very appreciated. My colleagues always try to provide the most updated, precise, correct news for our dear listeners around the world, and we are so happy that you loved it. Vasily Kuznetsov from Russia, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. Many thanks for sending us this email. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And from Bangladesh, we have an email from Muhammad Sharifal Islam, one of our regular listeners. He says, thank you for being in touch with us. This is to inform you that I am always listening to IRIB English Service every now and then, and I have some reception reports of past months with some comments, which I shall send in the coming days when I manage to find some time. Thank you in advance. Wishing you health and well-being during this pandemic. Salam and warm greetings to you, Muhammad Sharifal Islam from Bangladesh, one of our old and regular listeners. Thank you for sending us this email. We're so happy that you always listen to IRIB English Radio. So we also wish you all the best things in life, and of course, health and well-being during the time of pandemic. Write to us soon, Muhammad Sharifal Islam from Bangladesh. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. After a short break, I will be back with the last email from India. Please stay tuned. Welcome back from India, from Pratima Bahakat, from Foreign Radio Listeners Club. We have an email. This email says, dear IRIB friends, on the verge of the new year 2022, we would appreciate it if you can send us your current printed schedules, some souvenirs, stamps, and small gifts. If possible, please keep sending your newsletter. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to Pratima Bahakat from Foreign Radio Listeners Club from India. We are so happy to receive an email from you. As for your request about sending you printed schedules, souvenirs, stamps, small gifts if possible, actually it is not possible at the time of pandemic. But my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card. As I have said several times during the programs, the frequency schedule is available at our website at www.parsday.com/yen. But the souvenirs, we will send souvenirs of IRIB English Radio after the pandemic is controlled. Pratima Bahakat from Foreign Radio Relations Listeners Club, thank you for sending us this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. Thank you. And before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, I appreciate those of our great listeners who have sent us reception reports and emails and letters from around the world, including Radar Wu, Michael Suberg, Toshio Shibata, Pratima Bahakat from Foreign Radio Listeners Club, Vasily Kuznetsov, Muhammad Briel, Anand Mohan Bain, and Muhammad Sharifal Islam. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, many thanks for being with us. We wish you all the best. Keep in touch and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. China, referring to the recent U.S.-sponsored summit on democracy, has said that Washington is using democracy as a weapon of mass destruction. Beijing says the U.S. is guilty of inciting division and instigating color revolutions. Now, the U.S. is accused of trying to divide the world even further. This as entities such as Israel was invited to participate when it practices apartheid on a daily basis, and Taiwan, which is considered a part of China, was invited, and Beijing was not, by the country that actually stands accused of being anything but democratic, the United States of America.
The controversial two-day U.S. Summit for Democracy has been concluded. The event was held virtually with over 100 countries in attendance.
So let's raise up our ambitions and rise up to meet the challenges together. Thank you, and I look forward to us following through in the next year on all the commitments that we're making individually. Thank you.
The U.S. faced scrutiny over how it went about deciding which countries to invite. China and Russia were the highest profile names left off the invite list. China was especially upset because it was not invited, whereas China was. The island is a major source of contention between China and the U.S. over Washington's military and political support for Taiwan that seeks independence from mainland China.
In efforts to maintain its hegemonistic status,
The U.S. has abused the public idea of democracy to serve its selfish interests, instigated division and confrontation under the pretext of democracy, sabotaged the UN-centered international system and the international order based on international law, which are all outright acts against democracy.
Beijing slammed Washington over seeking to use democracy as a pretext for imposing hegemony. China says the U.S. is using democracy as a weapon of mass destruction to interfere in other countries. Russia also accuses the Biden administration of exhibiting a Cold War mentality that will stoke up ideological confrontation in the world. Questions have been raised on why the U.S. should hold such a summit, a country accused of rights violations at home and abroad. At home, Washington is suffering from problems like racial injustice that has stirred massive nationwide protests over the killing of innocent African Americans. The U.S. has also been criticized for its controversial election system, which is not based on popular vote. A recent Harvard University poll found that over 50% of young people in the U.S. believe that the country's democracy is in trouble. Abroad, the U.S. is the major supporter of Israel, which has occupied Palestinian lands and unleashed atrocities and wars on Palestinian people. It is also the main supplier of arms to countries such as Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. The two countries are involved in the Yemen conflict that has left tens of thousands of innocent people dead. The U.S. itself has also invaded countries like Iraq and Afghanistan under the pretext of bringing democracy and fighting terrorism, but death and destruction have been the only outcome. Many believe that the U.S. describes only its allies as democratic countries just because they comply with its foreign policy dictates and policies. It also resorts to undemocratic means and weaponizes democracy as a tool to pressure countries to align themselves with Washington's interests.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the spotlight, veteran journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier out of Brussels. And writer and political commentator Fabrizio Godoni out of Como, Italy.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with me. I'd like to start this off in Brussels. And Elijah, what do you think the overall goal of the summit was?
I think the summit, thank you for having me, first of all.
Thanks for coming.
I think the summit is directed toward the countries who are not submitted to the U.S. hegemony. And I think what is called weapon of mass distraction rather than destruction is democracy that is used by the U.S. in every single country that is refusing to submit to the U.S. hegemony. If you look throughout the history, we know that Iran in 1953, Guatemala in 1954, Indonesia 55, Brazil in the 60s, Chile 73, Nicaragua in the 80s, the examples are infinite where there were elected government and were toppled by the U.S. So therefore, the U.S. is not looking for the democracy per se, but is looking how to con people and then use very beautiful words and values to go and attack countries and the state that fear their competition or their presence on the world stage. And if we look at the U.S. best allies in the Middle East, for example, they all are non-democratic states who never been elected by the population. If we look at the Gulf countries, we hear what the president, the U.S. president, is saying about how, for example, President Trump, how he loves dictators, presidents. We see how the attack on Iran that is commanded and directed by a population who elect their own parliament, unlike all the other states, most of the other states in the Middle East. And we see how the election, for example, of President Bashar al-Assad in Syria, we see what's happening in Yemen and the war that is lasting for 6 years by the Americans and the Saudis against a population that opted to put itself under the control of a leadership that represents a large part of the population. This is a real democracy that the Americans are fighting, and that is very clear that the Americans use this word and these summits to gather all its vessels, like the Europeans, who just follow the U.S. policy without any argument, and to attack China.
Elijah, let me get Fabrizio in on this discussion. Well, Fabrizio, you heard what Elijah said, basically using the word democracy, but being anything but a democracy. And it just seems that the U.S. Is trying to divide the world even more. I mean, that's what Beijing has accused Washington of, inciting division the world over. Your take on this?
Yeah, it seems that this kind of arrangement for the summit on democracy is basically trying to divide in the world. In my opinion, the United States, they want to show to the world that they have the monopoly of the term of the democracy. That is ridiculous, okay? Because if we see the violation of the principle of the democracy and the human rights in particular in the territory of the United States and outside, we see an incredible violation. We have in the United States the highest incarceration rate of the world. We have they have allowed a system like a Guantanamo prison to exist, and we have these infinite wars that are lasting for, let's say, many years from 9/11 and even before. But, you know, if I can say something why, in my opinion, we had this meeting, that we have this summit of democracy, is an agenda of Biden that is at two levels. One is for internal reason and one for external one. Internal reason, we don't have to forget that soon, next year, we will be the midterm election, and if Biden wanted to reassure the global elite of the existence of this policy that is in opposition to the Trump one. The second point is a clear message, super clear message to China and especially to Russia. Not inviting them, but also what they have, what they have said during this during summit, and also which people they have invited. Okay, because they didn't invite only the prime minister, but they invite also people that doesn't represent at all, doesn't represent nobody actually.
Okay, all right. Well, let me cross back over to Elijah. Those that are saying, I mean, China is one. It talks about basically the U.S. It's as if they want another Cold War. It's that they have put up the Berlin Wall again, and it's those countries who are so-called democratic and those who are autocratic, according to Washington. I mean, what is the overall goal here? What really are they trying to do? Is it that they want to increased tensions, or your evaluation of it, Elijah?
I think what the U.S. is afraid of is the growing influence of China that is offering a completely different model than the U.S. The U.S. offering a model where it is imposing itself on government and population, while China is approaching the population in a different way, where it believes that the construction project, rebuilding of the infrastructure, is very useful for the countries of the different countries in Africa and in the Middle East to rebuild the society and push away the state of war where everybody can benefit from business. Now that is extremely damaging to the US hegemony, where the US adopted a completely different model of control and dominance. And the control of dominance, it's offering destruction, tens of thousands of people killed in Afghanistan, hundreds of thousands in Iraq. This is the model that the Americans are offering. And the model that the Chinese are offering is extremely threatening to the US concept and to the image in the Middle East. That is all what it's about.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point that you've just made, Elijah. Let me pick up on that, Fabrizio, with Elijah basically saying it's more of a fear of competition, basically, from the United States because of China. If what Elijah said is true, basically talking about the model that the Chinese use, I mean, wouldn't it be beneficial for the United States to reevaluate and sort of tweak its, if you want to say, business model and change it? I mean, when it sees that it is deteriorating rapidly and the Chinese are continuing to expand across the world, why wouldn't they change the way that they do what they do?
Because I think that, you know, what our guest said, that I definitely agree, but there is a mechanism that is already existing for decades that is linked to the weapon manufacturing that is, we have seen the data just 2 weeks ago, that the United States has the largest manufactured weapon and selling around the world. For them, this is a business, you know? And, you know, they create money and they destroy the money of the other people through a different kind of war, okay? Through conventional war, hybrid war, and other things. I think that China, for them, is a double challenge. Is a mental challenge because it challenges the system and it challenges also the economy because China is growing very, very fast with new technology and now with in the last few years with this infrastructural project, the Belt and Road Initiative that is already existing in Central Asia and in other parts of the world. So it's a challenge that they have to contain. They use this word, contain. In my opinion, they don't have the mind to change their mentality because they have too. There are too many interests. There are too many interests in this geopolitics activity.
What about that, Elijah? Too many interests in this the way that it's set up right now. Would you say then that the United States basically has sacrificed itself for a few, for the military-industrial complex, that it is not looking at the interests of Americans or overall for the country, but of that elite few, and that's why we see the situation that we're witnessing, or your evaluation?
The problem is the majority of the Americans don't know what's happening in the rest of the world. Therefore, it is really an American administration that is taking up the policy of remaining on top of the world. Well, that's gone because the era of hegemony and unilateral hegemony of the world is over. When Russia has woken up in 2015 and engaged in the war in Syria to stop the jihadists from overthrowing the Syrian government, and the role of China that is supporting Russia with the United Nations to stop any act of war against Iran and other countries, this is representing a serious challenge to the U.S. The U.S. behavior from their point of view is sending soldiers overseas to fight wars and die only for the control of the U.S., but there are no interest for the U.S. to remain, for example, in northeast Syria just to take the oil. In Texas, there is more oil than in the north of Syria. So it's only a question of disturbing and destruction and not the construction of the countries in need. This is the model that the Americans are offering, and the American population is not aware of it. This is why the American administration can get away with it, because they don't have to explain anything to their population, and there is no accountability for whatever the U.S. is doing, and there is a clear violation of the international law when there is no other country, including the European, who are contesting the U.S. behavior anywhere in the world.
Well, Fabrizio, I mean, isn't it ironic when we look at this whole situation that Washington hosted this summit on International Human Rights Day, the day that journalist Julian Assange's court ordered him to be extradited to the United States for doing nothing more than exposing the abuses of the U.S. military. I mean, where does this democracy, or even the word democracy, fit into this scenario? It takes a lot of arrogance, one could say, for the United States to even hold such a summit and call itself the leader of the democratic world. Your take?
Yeah, it's absolutely it's like a joke, as you said. I mean, about the moment when Assange has basically is prosecuted and has the chance to be extradited in the United States, this one it represents one of the most important human rights that we have, the right of a democracy to the free press, to the information, to the journalism. This one is quite an amazing point, you know. But, you know, let me, I would like to say this one, that because I believe that this summit is just a propaganda tool, it's just a propaganda tool, okay? Propaganda works on emotion. It doesn't work on rational. And they have used another day that also has a lot of significance for the American people, the 7th of December, that was the 80th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And you know what's happened the 7th of December? We have a video conference, Biden, Biden, Putin, one day of resting, because of course they have to rest one day. And then we have these 2 days meeting that is nonsense meeting, 9 and 10. So has been created this propaganda tool on the emotion. No, it's just a propaganda thing. We don't have to think, you know, other than that.
Mm-hmm. You say propaganda, that it's just propaganda. But, well, let me turn this turn to Elijah. Fabrizio says it's propaganda, but with this type of propaganda, I want to look at the type of division that it can cause and actually escalate the situation, whether we're talking about relations between Washington and Beijing or Washington and Russia. We saw that they invited Taiwan, but of course not China. At the end of the day, this type of conference and dividing between basically drawing that line in the sand between those who are with us and those who are against us, I mean, what does it do? It does not exactly set the stage easy to deal with things in a way that states can actually talk and try to end or lessen hostilities. How do you see it?
Well, I see the propaganda is a very powerful tool to manipulate the popular opinion and blur the truth about the real objective behind it. And the propaganda used by the U.S., which is very powerful, and the U.S. is very good at it, has been used throughout the years by several countries. And we know that this club that was invited